Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of In the Ring with Acacia Comont. Very happy to have you with me today. We have a lot to discuss on today's show. This episode is brought to you by Keeneland Sales, home of the world's yearling sale, Keeneland September. Graduates of the September yearling sale excel on racing's biggest stages, including the likes of Book One yearling Leslie's Rose, Moose, a Book Four yearling, recent Grade One winner Vava, who was purchased in Book Three, and plenty more. Big thank you to Keeneland for the support. We're going to talk a little bit about the process of getting ready for those Keeneland sales and what we saw with Keeneland Racing recently. And we're going to talk a little Kentucky Derby 150 in the books already as we move on to the next stages of the Triple Crown. I'm very excited for all that will happen throughout the next couple of weeks and culminating with the Belmont Stakes taking place in Saratoga this year, which will be really exciting. So with that said, we'll get right to it. Welcome in the first guest. I'm very happy to welcome back to the show, Cormac Brannock of Keeneland Sales. And Cormac, it is that exciting time of year. We just had the Kentucky Derby. It's really a joyful time to be a racing fan and be able to follow all of the great things that are happening in the sport right now.
It really is. We had a terrific race meet here. We had a busy Derby week and hosted some people up at Churchill and met a lot of our friends and clients and saw some graduates run well. And now we're about to embark on inspections and ahead of the September sale. We had our entry deadline just pass, and so everything's happening. We're going to be in the cycle here for the next while, but it's a great time of year, and it'll be fun to get on the road and see everybody.
A lot looking towards the future, as you mentioned, and want to talk about the process in prepping for the September sale. But first, let's look back a little bit. The Keeneland spring race meet concluded, and that's always exciting. You get the first look at the two-year-olds. You get some of those big prestigious races. I always in particular look forward to the big graded turf races throughout the Keeneland spring meet. Can you reflect back a little bit on some of the highlights of what we saw?
Yeah, it was very fun meet. We were challenged a little bit early on with the weather. We had a great opening weekend, then we had some weather impact, some turf racing for a few days that second week. But overall, the meet was extremely successful. We had some real highlights. It was fun to see Mandy Pope's Whisper Hill Farm win the Central Bank Ashland with a Book One graduate and Leslie's Rose. And, you know, there were a lot of good turf performers like you relayed. I mean, Arzak was so good. We had Gatewood Bell's Hat Creek Racing had a really promising two-year-old filly called Burning Pine. That's a Hiddenbrook bred filly that won very impressively. It looks like she's going to Ascot. And the half-brother Neat won the Transylvania Stakes. And so, just a meet full of highlights. And, you know, for a change, Wesley Ward, you know, won a bunch of two-year-old races and other races too. So some things don't change. But it was really fun out there. We set a record for a single day handle on opening Saturday on Bluegrass Day. So just, you know, a lot of positives, a lot of excitement. And we had some construction, you know, things. We have a big construction project going on, but people really dealt with that very well. And we had max capacity crowds on several of the big days. So a lot to be happy with and to take forward into the future.
Like you said, looking forward to the future with Keeneland and some of the, you know, the biggest events have been held there. Of course, the Breeders' Cup and looking ahead for what the future might hold. What are some of the things that we can expect to see moving forward with Keeneland and some of the things that fans can be treated to in future race meets?
Well, by hopefully the fall of next year, we're on a tight schedule, but I'm confident we'll get there. We'll have the completion of the largest infrastructure project at Keeneland since its opening. And that's the approximately $93 million paddock building that's being built, the length of the paddock between the parking lot and the other side of the grandstand, basically, from the paddock. And that's a two-story building with a rooftop bar. And it's really going to revolutionize the hospitality that we can provide. It's going to offer a lot more ticketing to the public. So it's more than 1,400 individual seats can be ticketed for purchase in that location. And it's worked. It's been a very popular venue when it was built on one half of the paddock temporarily for the Breeders' Cups that we've had. And so it also will serve a dual purpose because it's very close to the sales pavilion. So we'll be able to offer more dining options and different things for our sales clients. And everybody's very enthusiastic about what that's going to bring. And hopefully, instead of, you know, selling out our public dining tickets in eight or 10 minutes, which we currently do for our meets, will have a little more capacity for the demand, which is, it's a great problem to have, but it's a problem we want to address.
Yeah, hot ticket, that's for sure. But as you mentioned, looking ahead to some future sales, and we just wrapped up the April sale, a very useful sale for horses of racing age. But of course, looking ahead to the yearling sales coming up, and you mentioned the inspection process starting for Keeneland September, a sale that I think pretty much every agent, horseman, owner has circled on the calendar. What is that inspection process like? What does it entail? And I think many people may not realize that it actually does start this early.
Yeah, it's a long process to put on a 4,000 horse plus horse sale, as it turns out. But our entry deadline was basically at the end of last week or the 1st of May. And effectively, we took entries through the weekend. We're processing those entries right now in terms of the location of the horses and putting together a Google map with the horses and where they are. And we'll have two teams on the road starting next Monday. And each team will see approximately 1,500 yearlings. And so we'll see the vast majority of everything that will end up in books 1 through 4 in Keeneland September. And it gives us the knowledge of what the horses are to the best of our abilities in terms of placing them in the best spots. So we get limited time, but with a team approach, pretty effective appraisal system so that we can help in moving better horses forward and weaker horses backward based on consigners' wish lists, and try to do the best we can to have the right horses in the right spots for the buyers that fly in and may not want to stay 2 weeks. So that's, it's a big process, and it's a really fun process because, we get to see our friends and our clients and colleagues all around mostly the central Kentucky area and see the best of, much of the best blood stock in the world, frankly, at the yearling stage. And we get to see a lot of progeny of the first crop sires and really get a feel for what those horses are throwing. And it's a really neat time of year.
The Keeneland September yearling sale beginning Monday, September 9th. As you mentioned, book one, kind of what we think of as the elite yearlings of that group. It's where you expect to find some of the future stars. What are some of the qualifications that a horse has to show in order to be rewarded with being placed in book one?
That's a really good question. And I think historically people have leaned on pedigree for that, as being the main criterion or credential for a horse to be in book one. But, we've all seen over the last few decades, really, the strength of the confirmation. And most of the buyers, when they're asked this kind of question, what do you like in a yearling? They say, well, we want to buy an athlete. And so getting well-conformed athletic individuals with the size and scope that the buying base wants up front is more important, I think, in a lot of ways than the actual pedigree. So we've put together our team with Tony Lacey as the VP of sales and me and Mark Morandi, Dean Rothmeyer, and others, and Buff Bradley, Julie Cawthon's on our inspection team. It's a real team approach, but we've put a lot of emphasis on trying to diversify the pedigrees or at least the sire lines as much as we can while maintaining strict confirmational qualifications for being in book one. Because when you get that right, then that you really get the return. So we're pleased with what we've been able to achieve in the last few years and looking forward to trying to repeat the process. But it's the Super Bowl for a lot of our clients is the September sale. We get a lot of support from a huge array of expert breeders and consigners and everybody else involved. So we take it really seriously and try to work with them so that they're confident in our approach. And hopefully we all get to the end of September feeling like it's been a success.
What are the conversations like with the consigners as far as placing horses? You mentioned the consigners' wish list. Do you kind of rely on them sometimes to point out saying, hey, I think this might be a book one quality horse?
We absolutely do. And since I've been part of this, we've used the wish list as our starting point. And what will happen typically is more people than spaces will want to be in books 2 or 3 or 3 or 4, kind of in the middle of the sale. It's been perceived as, for a long time, as a bit of a safe zone. But our job then is to say, we think this horse is better. We think this horse deserves to be in book 2 or even in book 1 based on the 50, 60, 70 yearlings by that sire that we've seen. We think you've got one of the best ones by X. why don't you put it forward? And typically those horses that have been moved forward have sold really well. So that's our goal, is to, again, just try to put the horses objectively where we think they'll sell well. But, you know, I think it's important. We try to give the consigners and the breeders that are sending them horses the spots that they want as much as we can, and then just move what we have to move. And we move forward or backward based effectively on our confirmation notes. And then they get the option at the end of that window to swap horses if they feel like, no, really, we want to have this one here and we'll move this one back or something like that, then that's their right to do that. So it's a back and forth process that takes several weeks. But we get to the middle of July, and then the catalog has gone off for assembly.
The marketability of freshman sires always fascinates me. I'm sure you've seen, you know, with the two-year-old sales recently, that the sales toppers have been by freshman sires. And it's one of those exciting things where you've just recently seen horse X, Y, and Z on the racetrack, and now you get a chance to see their progeny. What's the inspection like for a new stallion and looking to see what their offspring might show and how they might distinguish themselves very early on in whatever we've seen that horse throw?
You know, we'll look at them. Typically, we'll see a lot of them. You know, those horses are popular with breeders, and there are several commercial breeders that will lean heavily on first crop sires. So we'll typically have a lot of entries by the popular first season sires. So you do get a sense of what, you know, for what they throw or whether they're really consistent or not, and all of that. So, and again, it comes back to your previous question, what we just discussed, which is if people want to be in the middle books, which might be the sensible place to put, say, a yearling by a, say, $30,000 first crop sire.
Right.
We don't want to have a glut of them, you know, where there's two or three stallions are kind of each have 30, 40 horses in a session. That doesn't make sense to the market. They compete each other out of the marketplace in some ways. So then we try to move the best handful forward and put them in front of the biggest money and on the biggest stage in book one or maybe book two. And so that's a challenge, of course, but it's something that can be very rewarding when you get the right horse in the right spot. And we saw that last year with some of the first crop sires. And, you know, Volatile had an extremely strong book one as one horse that sticks out. I think he'd won Bring a Million or 950. And they'll, you know, the buying public will support these first crop sires as heavily as they'll support, you know, a proven horse like Curlin or Into Mischief or Uncle Mo, because of the excitement of what that horse could be. And so, you know, we try to spread them out a little bit, like I said, just to share the market with them.
Very interested to see what will be this year's exciting freshman stallions and get a chance to see them go through the sales rings. But it's also that time of year, Cormac, as you touched on with Wesley Ward and his two-year-olds at Keeneland in the spring, where you get a chance to see some of the horses that have gone through the Keeneland September yearling sale or other sales and make it to the racetrack with all of the two-year-old races starting. First two-year-old race of the year in New York is on Friday, and it's that time when you get a chance to look forward to it, of course, as we get closer to Saratoga and Del Mar. How much do you all pay attention to the graduates, especially as you get into these exciting two-year-old races?
That's a really something we really enjoy, is just seeing where these horses have come from, and, you know, do the homebreds beat the September graduates or vice versa? And you know, in a lot of cases we'll have notes and even photographs of the September graduates that we would have seen. We'll have those notes, and it's great to refer back to them just as a, you know, as a learning tool for carrying the process forward into future years. You know, precocity is a big factor in what sector of the market looks for, and you want to make sure you've identified that in your notes from the previous year, and that you didn't think this was a later developing colt if it's going to win whatever the, you know, at Keeneland April or Keeneland Spring Meet or in the early summer in New York. So we'll follow those two-year-old races with a lot of interest. And, you know, hopefully the people who supported our sale will have a lot of luck.
And speaking of graduates, a horse that was a Keeneland September graduate is Muth, who will arguably be one of the favorites, if not the favorite, for the Preakness Stakes coming up in a couple of weeks. And just once again speaks back to following those horses and seeing them do big things on the racetrack.
Yeah, you know, that's probably the biggest reward of all is seeing graduates. And, you know, it's interesting because they've come from all parts of the sale. I think Muth was in book four. You know, Vava just broke her G1 duck on Saturday at Churchill and couldn't have been more impressive. I mean, she's a superstar filly, and she was, I think, at the end of book three. And then you've got Leslie's Rose was book one. You've got Kabir Khan was sold on the last day of the sale, the horse that went to Kazakhstan and then won in the Al Maktoum Challenge in Dubai. So, you know, first day, last day, and everywhere in between. Newgate, I think, he was on the first day and won the big cap. So the sale offers something for everybody in terms of the buying potential at each session and each price point. But it's each one is a source of pride for us to have been supported with those by the breeders as yearling prospects.
It's obviously a really busy time in the fall as we have race meet, Keeneland September, as you mentioned, Keeneland November sale, the preparations starting now. For those not familiar with what really goes on behind the scenes in the world of the sales, it really is a constant preparation, isn't it, as far as building up the brand, making sure to attract the best horses, the best breeders and consigners. What is balancing all of that like as far as your position is concerned?
It's a big team effort, I think, is probably the best way to put it. But, you know, there's a recruitment side, there's an operations, making the sale happen side, which is sort of my primary focus. And then there's the hospitality and the acknowledgement of graduates and all of that marketing side. That's a separate team that we work closely with. And so a lot of people really contribute in an important way to building the brand in that sort of broad sense. You know, we're in the trenches when horses are in the ring, or, you know, and that type of thing. And when we're putting the catalogs together, but it takes a village, and we have a really good one. So that's mm-hmm. very gratifying to us, but the year round aspect is so true. You know, the September sale isn't for another 4+ months, the beginning of it, but Tony Lacey and I are going to the East Coast tomorrow and back Friday night. We're going to go to 10 or 12 farms and do early inspections on some yearlings that are out there, many of which will relocate here, and we'll see them in another 5 or 6 weeks before inspections end. And then, like I said, the two teams will spend 5-6 weeks doing inspections. Then we put the catalog together, and then there's a few sort of quieter weeks while we're getting November entries, and then we have to put that mm-hmm. catalog together before the September sale starts. So, and then it's straight into the race meet in October, and it's a whirlwind, but and a challenge. But like I said, we have a large and very, very effective team, and hopefully we're doing it the right way.
Oh, one more quick question, because you mentioned something that I think is an interesting point as well, as far as going out this week to see yearlings. As we know, horses at this stage can really change and develop so quickly. One that might be a little bit at the back of the pack as far as development could come along in the next 6 weeks and really kind of stamp itself as sure. a horse that has a little bit more ability. So do you see them multiple times? What are the notes like on that as far as following the progression of yearlings at this stage?
We really only see them once, but we do have to project. And so a major emphasis that I feel when I look at them is, what's their birth date? You know, because you really want to be forgiving of these horses. And right now they're just hitting grass. A lot of them are putting on weight, and, you know, you just want to project the best you can. But having, you know, a background where I worked at breeding farms like Edina Springs and then Airdrie Stud before mm-hmm. coming here, I've been looking at full, you know, horses from foaling to yearling stage and beyond for a long time. And we, you know, and Tony was a commercial consigner for a long time and did this very same thing just on a private basis. And, you know, Dean came from Darley and saw an awful lot of horses there. Mark has a very varied background. So, you know, and there are others as well, but we each bring something to the table. And because we have a team approach, there are 3 or 4 members in each team. And at the end of the day, we'll dissect the horses where we don't have consensus and try to decide, you know, you thought that knee might not hold, I thought it would, and just try to come up with a consensus to where we can guide the consigners if we need to, based on wish listing, the best we can. But it's a challenge. I mean, nobody can be right at this thing all the time, that's for sure. But, you know, you get experience counts for a lot, I guess.
Absolutely. It is a fascinating process. And I'm always so impressed with the way that you all do it and put the books together. And like I said, can't wait to see this year's group of exciting yearlings and be able to follow a lot of the graduates on through the summer and the rest of the Triple Crown. Cormac, thank you as always for taking the time and to give us some wonderful insight today. Always appreciate it.
Thank you, Acacia. It was fun. We'll do it again.
I'm so happy to welcome in my guest coming up here. It's been quite the past couple of weeks for this individual. I'm thrilled to welcome in Lance Gassaway, co-owner and co-breeder as well of Kentucky Derby winner Mystic Dan. Lance, thank you so much for joining me. First of all, how has the last week and a half been? Has it settled in that you won the Derby?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on your show. Glad to be here. And yeah, it's starting to sink in a little bit, you know, trying to catch our breath. A lot of interviews, which, you know, I'm not accustomed to. I'm a former country boy, so this is all new to me. But yeah, I mean, it's starting to set in a little bit, and really excited about where we go from here.
And it was such an exciting race, the thrilling finish coming down to the wire, a great ride from Brian Hernandez Jr. to saving ground. Can you talk me through your emotions a little bit as the three horses hit the line together?
Yeah, you know, before the race, you know, we felt good about our horse. You know, of course, when you're running in a race that big and with that many, you know, horses in it, you know, your main concern is if you get a good trip. And so when, you know, when we come out of the gate and we got on the rail, you know, we did feel like we got where we wanted to be. And so, you know, we had definitely had confidence in Brian to, you know, get us through the trip and all, because he is just, you couldn't ask for a better ride than what he gave us. He won the race for us, plain and simple. And yeah, coming down the stretch, you know, I really thought we was going to go and pull away, but they started coming and, you know, I'm just sitting here hoping the finish line hurry up and get there.
But for a horse too that had run good races, he's now actually the only three-year-old to have run two triple digit buyer speed figures this year, winning the Southwest. He'd shown in some of his races that he had that ability in there with those big finishes. And I mean, how exciting that he was able to put it all together and show it on the biggest stage.
Yeah, you know, the couple of the races before were, you know, like you're saying, he didn't show as well. You know, when we moved him up from 5.5 furlongs to a mile race and on a 2-week layoff. And and from that race, after that race, we were disappointed. We run fifth. And but after we scoped the horse, he had had a lung infection. So, you know, he couldn't breathe. That, you know, answers why he didn't run there. And then we come back in the Smarty Jones. We run fifth, but we was 3 lengths off the winner. And it was a tie for third. All the third, fourth, and fifth were just right there together. And we got nosed out in that one. And you know, we knew the horse could go longer at that point. He just wasn't in that type of shape yet. So and with Kenny likes to work his horses in the shape more so. And typically on most horses, it takes a couple longer races to get them ready.
And I know you and your family call Arkansas home, and winning a race like the Southwest at Oakland Park at your home track, finished third in the Arkansas Derby. How special was that, winning one of the marquee three-year-old races at Oakland with a horse that has been so fun and exciting for you?
Oh yeah. You know, that we're Arkansas born and raised. So naturally, you know, I grew up going to Oakland, and I've had horses there before, and I've actually had a horse back in 2020. My dad and I, named Wells Bayou, and we won the Louisiana Derby with that horse, and we run second in the Southwest then. So yeah, anytime we can win a race at Oakland, and I mean, with the purse money there, and then now they're bringing some of the best horses in the nation comes to Oakland because of the purses, it's just means the world to us, you know, being home.
And it was such an impressive finish that day too. But one thing that I think is so cool is that he's actually a homebred for you, the Dam Ma'am, which is a name I love, that Kenny actually trained for part of her career as well. Tell me a little bit about her and what it was like campaigning her. She was Hickory.
Yeah. You know, Ma'am, we bought her, in a private purchase from, Mr. Ted Bassett and Miss Lucy Bassett, you know, the big breeders there in Kentucky. And, you know, campaigned her most of the time through Kenny. And, you know, she was just a real gentle horse. I mean, loving horse. And, you know, I think she turned out 250, maybe something like that. And when we decided to, I mean, she was just a real sweet horse. And she has, you know, we won a couple of allowance races with her. I don't think she would have been a stakes horse, but maybe, you know, a possibly black type if she wouldn't have got hurt. But she was a very easy horse, real gentle. And the Mystic Dan takes right after his mama. I mean, he has the same personality. Ma'am used to love peppermints, and Mystic Dan loves peppermints. And she would love on you, and he'll do the same. He's not like the other colt we had. He'll bite you all the time. He put his head on your shoulder and eat peppermints and, you know, love on you.
I love that. I saw a quote, I don't remember if it was from you or from Kenny, saying that Mystic Dan's been described as an old soul.
Absolutely. I mean, he's just, you watch him walk around the shed row, and it's like you would think he's an old man. I mean, you know, he got his head down and just kind of just strolling along, you know, real easy. And then, you know, you carry him out. We had him out there by the track of Kenny's barn, and you could see the, you know, the twin spires. And I mean, he'd just sit there like a statue and just look at them, and then just nothing bothered him. I mean, the tractors would be coming by. There actually was a race going on. And I mean, he'd just watch and keep eating. Mowers coming by and wouldn't do nothing. I mean, he's just a real, real chill horse.
I absolutely love that. I love being around horses like that. And it must be really special too, the fact that you were a part of breeding him and having Ma'am, as you mentioned, and seeing those characteristics passed down. What was the process like in deciding to breed her? And then where did it come with picking out the mating of going to Golden Sense?
Okay, so when we first bought Ma'am, it was originally me and my brother and Daniel Hamby and my dad. So after she ran her career, Kenny had talked to me, and he said, you know, Lance, he said, you know, if you're thinking about getting into breeding business, because this is my first time to be in the breeding business.
Right.
And he said, you know, I think she'd make a good brood mare. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. I said, I really do. He said, I like her pedigree, you know, Colonel John. And he said, hey, I think it'd be good. And he said, I think you could breed her to a Golden Sense, try to inject some speed into her. And he said, I think it'd be good. So that was all Kenny. Kenny, you know, he convinced us to do it. And my dad, I talked to him about it, and dad was older then. And he said, son, I just don't think I need to get into breeding stuff, because I'm probably not going to be here that long, you know. And that's what he was concerned about. And of course, that come to fruition. He missed it a year. So he got out, and then my brother kind of got out of the business, and we got 4G Racing, Sherilyn and Brent, to which is my cousin, to come in with us, so we'd have a third, you know, third and a third partnership on it. And that's how that formed. And that's how, and Kenny, hey, he set the breeding up. And then the next time, the second one we bred her to was a Unified, and we had a filly out of her. She's 2 years old now. She'll be running here for long, and her name is Yes Ma'am.
I love that. Well, that's very exciting too. I love that name. So many fun things with the name Ma'am too. But
yeah,
I mean, how much more special does it make it? And Kenny, I have so much respect for him and his eye with buying horses. And you mentioned picking out breeding as well. And he's so sharp on that side of things, among many other things as well. But how much more special is it being able to win big races with a horse that your whole team has been part of right from the beginning, before conception, really?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, we've had the horse, you know, the mama since, you know, she was racing, and yeah, to have that, it's so special. And to be able to watch them grow up and all, you know, the night we had won a race with Southern Grace, Brent and Sherilyn and us and my dad and myself, it was us three. And we were eating in a restaurant that night that Mystic Dan was born. And we got a text, and they sent us a text with the video of all him being born and all. And so, you know, we went through it from the start, and, you know, when he was a baby. And yeah, I mean, it's just makes it that much extra special for us.
And with following along throughout the whole process and having your family involved, and you mentioned your dad, and from what I understand, the Kentucky Derby was on the anniversary of his passing. And for anybody that's involved in racing, we all mention the racing gods, and it seemed like the racing gods were pulling a few strings for that as well. And I know your dad had such a huge influence on your involvement in the game.
Yeah. Yeah. He was, it was the year anniversary of his death. And yeah, I mean, hey, I to me it was just meant to be. I truly believe, you know, my son after the race, he was hugging me. He said, Papaw got him through. Papaw got him there.
Wow.
You know, and I believe there's a lot of truth to that. I really do.
With all the ups and downs that anybody that's involved in horse racing experiences, we know it's incredible highs and incredible lows as well. And for many, winning the Derby is really kind of the pinnacle of it. But it seems for you that it's much more than that. It's a true appreciation of the game and everything that goes along with it.
Oh, absolutely. I just have a passion for it. So my fiance and I mean, we'd like to go to the barn and just hang out. You know, I like to go over there and feed them peppermints and, you know, watch them work out. And there's a lot of owners that, you know, they just want to, you know, go watch them race and that's it. I like being involved with them. I like watching them. I like talking to the trainers. I mean, watching the crew, we're so blessed to have a crew like Kenny has, you know, his team. I mean, you know, starting from Alan there at the at Magdalena, where he raises where the colt and all was raised, and now we have, you know, other babies there, and from his team, you know, the groom Chico, and he, you know, has Greg there at one barn, and Ray Briner at the other. I mean, his crew is just unbelievable, and how good they are with these horses, and we're just blessed to have a crew like that you can, you know, you can talk to, enjoy being around them, have a good time, learn about them, see your horses, pet them. That's just the part I like about it.
I couldn't agree more with you. It's special getting a chance to see their personalities on display as well. And you mentioned the process of getting a horse even to the racetrack when they're raised, when they're born, and starting all of that. And I'm sure with being on the breeding end of things, you've gotten to see a lot more of that in a deeper level. But it really is always amazing to me, all of the people that have to lay hands on a horse before they get into the starting gate of their first race, let alone for a race like the Kentucky Derby.
Oh yeah. You know, I was, we were, my son, he likes to play with numbers, and he said, Daddy, do you realize that 0.1% of foals that, you know, foals in a year make it to the top 20, the top 20 horses to get into the Derby. He said, so you pretty much hit the lottery. You won the Derby. And I said, well, you might have a point there. I said, that's pretty slim, but yeah, you know, to go through that process and even get into a race, you know, I think, what is it, half the foals that are foaled in America, only half make it even to a race.
Right.
So it's just unbelievable, you know, to even get there.
So now you've had some success as a breeder as well. You mentioned a 2-year-old unified filly, Yes Ma'am, coming up. Do you feel like that's a side of the industry that you'd like to be involved in a little bit more and maybe get some more mares and try your hand at breeding a bit more?
Well, believe it or not, we have another mare.
His
name's Southern Grace. And we had bred her to take charge Indy and just had that baby about 2 weeks ago when we was out there, actually. And it's a little colt. We haven't named him yet. Ma'am just had another colt just about, it was on April the 1st. And his name is going to be Waiting on Banks. And he's by Wells Bayou. So, and then we have another filly that's a yearling from Ma'am, and her name is Ford's Ma'am, and she's by Nick's Go.
Exciting.
So we got a lot in the schedule there coming up, and yeah, I mean, we're going to continue to breed. I mean, Ma'am, she's been covered by Into Mischief now. I think Monday we should know, you know, if she's in foal or not. And then we're gonna breed Southern Grace back to a Cyberknife. So yeah, I'm getting into that aspect of it a little deeper.
No, I love it though. I always find it's a really fun puzzle as well. And that's exciting, of course, Into Mischief, the sire of Golden Sun. So a similar cross, which could be very, very exciting. And you mentioned Wells Bayou, and that was a horse that you had purchased as a 2-year-old too. So now with kind of being more involved on this side and the breeding and really having your hands with the horses, are you still going to be active at sales and looking for horses, or staying more on that side of things?
You know, we went through the 2-year-old sales, my dad and I, for 3 or 4 years, and Liz Crow, we'd worked through Liz, who did a fabulous job for us. I really, really impressed with Liz and her eye. And, of course, I've known Kenny for years, and, you know, we've got some horses with Brad Cox, too. And like you had said earlier, Kenny is known, you know, that's what Kenny's reputation has always been, his eye for horses. Right. And I was actually there at Magdalena one day and visiting one of our babies or something. And Phasey Tipton was having a sale right there by, you know, joins right up to Kenny's place there at Magdalena. And he was working a sale over there. And he said, hey, you ought to come over tomorrow and just look. And I said, yeah, I'd like to see what you're looking at. And all. So I went over there you know, the route he's going, I think I'm going to lean more to that now. If I don't do it breeding wise, then I think I would probably lean more toward the yearlings, you know, late in the year, the November yearling sale. That's where we bought a horse we got that we're campaigning now named Gould's Gold. And it's a golden sense coat, oddly enough.
Fun.
But we've got a, you know, he won a, broke his maiden there at Oaklawn on a Derby day. And then we turned around and run him back in the Bath. He broke a maiden going 6 furlongs, and we run him in a 1 1/8 bathhouse row stakes, and he run third. So we really high on him. I mean, we knew, you know, that's a big ask out of a horse going 6 furlongs to 1 1/8, and horse ran big. So we're real excited about him, and he'll be running again here for long here in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always fun to have more exciting things to look forward to. And of course, winning the Derby is such a huge accomplishment, but that's one of the beautiful things about horse racing. There's always a lot more things to come up. I wanted to ask you too quickly in closing about Wells Bayou being a stallion. You mentioned you're going to have a little Wells Bayou baby of your own. How exciting is that to have a horse that you had success with in campaigning now have an opportunity to see his progeny on the track?
Yeah, that's really personally to me, it means a lot, you know, because that was just me and my dad with Wells Bayou. And so, yeah, I'm really excited about having his baby. And I'll tell you something else that's really kind of odd. So Wells Bayou, we sent him to Oklahoma to be a stallion. We couldn't get a deal in Kentucky. He'd only won a grade two. So it's hard to, you know, be a stallion in Kentucky unless you have a better resume, I guess you'd say. So anyway, he's staying a stallion in Oklahoma, and I think they bred him around 40, Miss Cain's, Ellen Cain's farm, and they bred him like 40, 45 times. Only three were live. Only three, took, I guess you'd say. He's infertile.
Wow.
So we're one of three. Here we go, odds again, that made it with Wells Bayou.
Wow. That's crazy. That's pretty exciting. So, you're going to have one, though.
Yeah. I mean, so once again, you know, it's like it's just meant to be, you know.
Right, right.
And I know they're doing a lot of tests. Ellen had told me, you know, it really bothered them because they had like 80 mares lined up for this year. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, we had to cancel, but they're doing a lot of tests and all trying to see if they can, I guess, make it where he's fertile, wherever mm-hmm. they do with that.
Oh, that's a wild story. And like you said, especially meant to be to have one of the three, and can't wait. Hopefully we get a chance to see that foal on the racetrack and see what that future might hold. But a crazy story. I'm going to definitely keep following with Wells Bayou, who is such a fun horse to follow. But Mystic Dan, he's made a fan, obviously, a lot of people with that Derby victory. But what a game effort from him as well. And I'm sure plenty more big races to come throughout the second half of the year. And Lance, I hope that you and your family and the whole team just really have a wonderful time enjoying the whole experience with this horse.
Well, I appreciate it. And I appreciate you having us on and the attention you've given, you know, for Arkansas. That's great for the state and the community and Kenny and, you know, the whole crew. Thank you for having us on.
Absolutely. And I just have to say real quick, I've only gotten a chance to be at Oaklawn once, but I got to go for the Rebel this year, and I had one of the most fun weekends of racing. It's really just a great place to go. The people couldn't have been nicer. The racing is great. I had the best time.
Well, you need to come back. When you come back,
Yeah.
you have my number now, so you can holler and we'll show you around Hot Springs.
I look forward to that. Thank you so much again for joining me today.
Thank you.
And that's it for today. Big thank you to my guests, Lance Gassaway and Cormac Brannock. And it was so fun to have a chance to talk to Lance about Derby winner Mystic Dan. We recorded this early in the week. So now it has been announced that Mystic Dan is confirmed going on to the second jewel of the Triple Crown at the Preakness Stakes. So hopefully we'll get a chance to see him take that next step on the journey to immortality, so to speak. Already one step there with the Derby victory, and the next race for Mystic Dan will be in this year's Preakness next week, the roads leading to Baltimore for Preakness coming up, the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. So we'll see what Mystic Dan has to offer us. And then, like I said, culminating the Triple Crown season at Belmont Stakes at Saratoga. Saratoga's home for me, so I'm especially excited for that. And with Belmont Park under construction, just what we'll have the opportunity to do with that big racing festival up at the spa for the next couple of years. I know that it's not traditional. I know that things are a little bit different than what they typically would be, but honestly, I think it's just going to be such a fun week of racing. So really looking forward to that. If you are planning to come to the Belmont Stakes, please come over and say hi. Our whole team will be there, and really excited to have the opportunity to bring all of that big racing home to all of you as well. But hope you'll be there sharing it with us. But as far as Triple Crown season is concerned, next stop, Preakness Stakes, and we'll see what that has in store for Derby winner Mystic Dan. Thanks as always for joining me on In the Ring. Be back next time. As always, please feel free to share this episode if you enjoyed it, and let me know if you have any topics or individuals that you think would fit well on the show. Thank you again to Keeneland Sales for the support. See you next time on In the Ring.